You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You've heard it before, your team every day, or in mine and Josh's case of late, every Sunday, once a week. When Sundays come. Anyways, as implied, we are recording on a Sunday night. I'm Gavin Shaw, your host. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York City to cover your Brooklyn Nets. And I'm with Josh, the lifelong fan, and he's proving those credentials this week as he is the one of the two of us, me being under the weather and preparing for a kind of extremely convoluted trip to Washington, D.C. this week. And Josh is the one of the two of us that watched the Nets games this week. So, Josh, shout out to you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I hadn't seen a Nets game all season before this week. Told me that you're going to be out of town, and I actually need to start watching them. So, it was good to watch the team.
I was going
to
say, I thought your analysis has been stunningly on point all season, considering that you've only heard things second and third hand.
You admit that it was weird that I kept saying that Brook Lopez needs to be more involved, right?
I didn't want to burst your bubble. So yeah, I let you have that. All right. So
speaking of Brolo, hold on, can we get him back? Because he's only playing like 18 minutes a game on the Lakers right now.
Isn't that weird? I actually wanted to ask you about that. Like, how weird is that for you? Like, knowing how good he is and also how bad the Lakers are, and like the fact that like he's not playing. Like, I get like he's not really like a clean fit with what they want to do, but like don't you think they had like some kind of idea of how they wanted to incorporate in this offseason? And just like it seems like it's totally falling apart.
Yeah, I just don't think the Lakers have any plan whatsoever besides like getting superstars, and this current team, they have some talented pieces on it, but they don't know how to really play together. And I think that Luke Walton's a good player's coach, but he doesn't really have a vision of the overall roster that he wants. And I just see Brook Lopez on the bench looking kind of miserable. And I'm just playing like a Shawn Mendes Treat You Better song in my head, just watching him there, knowing that he belongs on the Nets.
Did you see that Kyle Kuzma tweet today? He asked,
he asked
Lonzo Ball, do you know who Sojourner, I'm probably butchering her name, but Sojourner Truth is? What's her name again?
Who? What is it? What is this?
You know, like the famous, like, never mind. Okay, I'll take this section out. It was basically, it was like Sojourner Truth, who was like, I think like helping either with the Underground Railroad or was like an activist. I think she's like an activist during like slave time. And like he asked Lonzo Ball like who she was, and Lonzo Ball said, "Is that Paul Pierce's niece?"
That's very funny. I'm looking at this now. I feel bad for not knowing this. American Women's Rights Activist.
Did I get her name right?
Yes, Sojourner Truth.
Okay, we'll keep this in then. We'll keep this in then.
Yeah, nice.
That's always a relief.
It's some cultural material for all of our listeners there, and also for ourselves.
That's why people are tuning in to be educated. Another one of those. You know, this is supposed to be a quick podcast, and I feel terrible for co-opting it already, but did you know the U.S. President, John Tyler, right? That's his name, right? Born in 1790, you know, both of his grandsons are still alive in 2018.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? He was alive. He couldn't have been born in 1790. He was probably born. He wasn't born in 1890. I think he was born in 1790.
He was definitely born in 1790, because he was one of the first, like, 50.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So he was born in 1790. Their dad was born in, like, 1860, and then they were born in like the 1920s.
Oh, okay, so he had kids very late. So
yeah. But isn't that insane though? They say think about how we've like known our like we both like known our grandparents in our life. And like you go up to these people, like have a conversation with them, and they'd be like, "Yeah, our grandpa was born like 8 years after the founding of the country." I'd be like, "Oh shit." I don't know.
They really had some street cred.
That's insane. Okay, enough of that. All right, so how are we going to structure this podcast? Because I did sit down this morning, watch the entirety of the Wizards game. But let's get into those other three: Raptors, Pistons, Hawks. Josh, give me some quick thoughts on those, and we'll bounce back and forth. I'll ask you some questions.
Yeah, you know, each game was different in its own right. I don't think we need to talk about the Pistons game because the Nets are usually very competitive, and that game was kind of a wash. And I think from the start, we saw that the team had no energy, and
Yeah.
That was a disaster to watch. But the Raptors game, Nets were in it until very late. Alan Crabbe making some huge plays to get the game to overtime. In the end, they fell short. Questionable officiating, yes. I think the seminal moment comes from Spencer Dinwiddie looking into the camera after possibly getting fouled that last play. I don't really think he was. But looking into the camera saying, what did he say exactly? This is exactly what I was talking about. And did you see that clip? Because that
I did.
That
you
was
sent
incredible.
It to me. Yeah, yeah. And we should mention now that you and a good friend of the show, Marcus Barahal, like all the shout-outs in the world to him, recorded like a great podcast on the Raptors game. And because of technical difficulties, that never got up. But
I forgot to mention that Zach Lowe was actually a guest on that episode.
Yeah, no, and Bill Simmons, and didn't Adam Silver come in for a few minutes?
Yeah, Adam Silver,
Iron Eagle, Dinwiddie himself was there to clarify the comments. But we're gonna record one with them each week, and hopefully that doesn't happen again. I did see those comments, and I think Dinwiddie's frustration is like pretty understandable at this point, honestly. Like, it's just been like a culmination of a lot, and like, I don't know, like, I'm not always with him. Like, sometimes I think he like complains about like what fouls that are like ticky-tack ones, and like that doesn't necessarily earn you the best reputation with the refs. And then sometimes when you get real ones, they're kind of, it's like the boy who cried wolf, they're like averse to calling it at that point. But that wasn't just Dinwiddie, it was like a build-up of the whole game, because like, if you remember, like the Nets, who were down by over 20 in regulation, could have won it before the end of the game if Caris LeVert hadn't been called for a charge on his attack into the lane on Serge Ibaka. And then on the replay, Ibaka was clearly shuffling his feet to get into him, and it would have been an and-one, so that was potentially a three-point swing. And considering the game went into overtime, there's a pretty good chance with a minute left that could have done it for the Nets.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some questionable officiating. It seems like there's a trend of this team to really look to the refs after every play, and it's kind of annoying to watch. That's what a lot of people gave the Clippers on those Chris Paul teams just so much grief for, because they were always looking for a call no matter what. And at the end of the day, it is in your own hands. The officiating is a big part of it. And when you're not getting calls like Dinwiddie hasn't, then it's disheartening. But he needs to focus on his game. And the way he's proving himself around the league, the calls are going to come. But obviously, in that Raptors game, there were some egregious non-calls, especially when Ibaka, quote-unquote, blocked him on a dunk attempt where he just mauled his hand, and that was
a bad
ridiculous
one.
And then Crabbe on that play to send the game into overtime, I think Kyle Lowry just landed directly on top of him. I don't understand how that wasn't an and-one. But anyway, you know, the Nets, obviously this year is, you want to win as many games as possible, but they're not going to make the playoffs. It's not as much about wins and losses, so we'll see what happens going forward. I think that it was good that Dinwiddie really brought to the refs' attention. Now he just needs to make sure that he goes out and plays his game and isn't overly focused on what the calls are.
Yeah, we should mention, like, that wasn't the story of the game for Dinwiddie. He also had a career-high 31 points. He had 8 assists. And I know even just really watching kind of the first and fourth quarters of that one, like, the way Dinwiddie attacked was just spectacular. Like, we see him settle it. He did go 3 of 10 from 3 in this game, but he also shot 9 free throws, made 8 of them. And every time he wasn't shooting free throws, he was getting to the lane, and like time and time again, he's so smart. Like the second like the defense kind of forgets about him, and he's just patient enough to wait for that moment, he like strikes like a cobra and gets right to the basket, finishes with authority. So he's shown off that element of his game all year, but I think in recent weeks he's kind of even maybe tuned it up a little bit more in that direction of going to the rim. So I really like seeing that.
Yeah, he's become the unquestioned leader of this team, and it's great to see for someone that is basically on a minimum contract and really was not supposed to be a huge part of the roster this year. But he's definitely solidified himself, in my opinion, as a top 20 point guard moving forward. And I think he's been a joy to watch, and I'm really excited that we have him on the team, because he's a great leader. He's very articulate, very smart. Just seems like an all-around great guy. Very funny on Twitter, which is bonus points for us as well.
And Josh, Nets fans love Spencer Dinwiddie, but you know the demographic that enjoys him even a little bit more? That is Daily Fantasy users. And if you're going to be playing Daily Fantasy, there's not a better place to do it than Draft. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on other salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft are enjoying it too. playing real live NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code LONBA. That's right, playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOCKEDONNBA. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Nets podcast listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. All you have to do is search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LONBA. All right, we talked about Spencer Dinwiddie's great performance. How about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson? A big-time game on the glass, 17 rebounds. And I noticed this both in this game and the Wizards game and really throughout the season, Josh. The Nets, like, rebounding, like, especially, like, when they're in, like, comeback mode or, like, on a possession, a last-second possession, is just, like, kind of incredible. Like, they, like, time after time after time, like, they take a bad shot kind of to open the closing minutes of a game or, like, the final positions. Like, a lot of times it's, just, like, Dinwiddie pulling up for a deep three like it was against the Wizards. And it seems like inevitably, whether it's, like, Joe Harris or Caris LeVert, like, a guard just comes flying in and they find a way to generate extra shots in those big moments.
Yeah, they have some guys that can really make plays on the offensive glass, and that's great to see. And I think that the gang rebounding, once because the Nets are undersized, especially at the 4 and 5 positions, and I think they know that. And guys like Dinwiddie, Crabb, LeVert do a great job of really gang rebounding and making sure that the other team can limit their chances. And obviously, when you have a big bruiser like an Andre Drummond or someone that can really give the centers trouble, that's different. But as a whole, I think the Nets do a great job really securing the basketball. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a big part of that. As you mentioned, 17 rebounds. I was honestly surprised that his stat line was so good in that Raptors game because I didn't think he played that well, but he was really making some plays passing at the end of the game. 5 assists, 2 steals, just being very active, being engaged every time he switched onto a guard. And sometimes he gave up baskets, but it's still that's what you want to see from him because he does have the tools to be a multi-positional defender, and it's whether he puts in the effort or not.
Yeah, what ultimately like lost the Nets this game beyond the officiating was they just didn't have any chance against DeMar DeRozan, who went 14-30 from the floor, 35 points, 6 assists. And at the end of the game, he was just getting to the rim at will. And even it seemed like they always had someone ready to double him, but he was just so crafty around the bucket and getting his shots up so quickly, or like even like a beat before and like going over guys instead of around them. And it just really seemed like the Nets didn't have much of an answer for him.
Yeah, it's shocking how much better he's gotten. I mean, I think a lot of people give him unnecessary hate because he doesn't take threes and he doesn't really create space for others around him, but he is absolutely lethal in the mid-range, and there's really nothing you can do once he gets going. Very Kobe-like. And I don't know, I take umbrage to the fact that you said that the main reason was because they couldn't stop DeRozan, because the Nets' offense was terrible in this game, in my opinion, besides the fourth quarter when Spencer Dinwiddie scored 17 in that quarter and really brought them back. They couldn't get anything going. LeVert, 2 of 13 from the field. Milton Doyle, don't even get me started on him, played 17 minutes and was absolutely awful. The guy takes 5 or 6 seconds with the ball before he makes a decision. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why Whitehead wasn't really up there, because I think he was able to provide more of a spark when he's come up this season than Doyle really would ever be able to.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I know, even though there are some people on Nets Twitter who think he is the next coming of, you know what, let's not get into that, but there are people who think he's really, really good. And I don't know, I see there are small flashes from him, but he just hasn't been able to shoot on the NBA level. And that, to his credit, like...
Shoot, score, defend, yeah. You know, he's 24 years old.
No, I know, but I mean, it's like it's really tough to come up in, like, those high-pressure situations. But yeah, I don't know if he's really a player. Like, I love the Nets, like, taking shots on guys like that and giving guys chances, and, like, they're constantly looking to find, like, the next Jeremy Lin or Bob Covington, and I appreciate that philosophy. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm surprised, honestly, like, I guess Whiteside, like, just the way he plays and, like, kind of...
Whitehead.
Oh, Jesus, God, I hate that. You know, I'm glad. It's kind of like a running joke we have on the podcast.
Well, we're playing the Heat on Friday, so maybe you're...
Good. Okay, so that'll... Yeah. I am. I'm so... Yeah.
Also, the
excited.
Nets do want to find the next Whiteside out of the D-League.
True. Yeah, that's... But, No, I'm just saying, like, I don't mind that mentality, and they have, like, unearthed guys like that, but I kind of agree with you that, like... I mean, Whitehead is, like, even though he, like... Not, I don't think he's, like, a great fit for the Nets, but he does play really well when seemingly when they need him.
Yeah, he can create shots and do it somewhat efficiently, which is, I think, all they need. And obviously the turnovers are the thing holding him back, because he's really not a pure point guard at this point. But I think he provides a spark. But yep. Again, as you mentioned, for every Spencer Dinwiddie or Joe Harris that the Nets find in the D-League, there's going to be, whether it's an Anthony Bennett, a Milton Doyle, someone that doesn't work out. And I think when you're trying to go for those reclamation projects, a 50% success rate is pretty excellent.
All right, Josh, I just want to take a quick second to remind our listeners to rate and review the Locked On Podcast Network. Or, you know, if you don't want to do that, because I'm always asking for, like, rates and reviews, here's like a more fun option. Just interact with us on Twitter a little bit. Josh is a lot better than me about it, but I know he's always tweeting stuff during games, and I'm going to try to start doing that, because I take down like a million notes, and I realized I could just as easily be like saving them online by tweeting them as I go through. So I'm gonna try to start doing that too, and try and interact with the account. Tell us when we're wrong, like that person who came after us for our repeated negativity about Alan Crabb, which we will get to in just a second. You could be that guy next, and that, I think, is really something to strive for. So try and interact with us on Twitter. If you don't want to do that and don't have a Twitter, rate and review. We really appreciate any and all interaction, positive, negative. We don't really care. We are all about it. All right, Josh, this is I don't think we should really have to eat crow about our Alan Crabb takes based on one good game, but he was really good in this one on a night that you mentioned. Like, I think one other guy, yeah, literally one other guy in the Nets rotation shot over 50%. So shout out to Alan Crabb, 6 for 11, 4 for 6 from 3. And I had no idea he had that drive in him. It was like honestly, it was like a little bit of a fluky shot, but the falling down one where he got injured to finish the game, like, that was cool. It was, that was like our complaint all season, and for him to make one in such a big moment kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, no, I think that he's had some struggles this year, as we've talked about, but it was good to see him put one through the net. And I think that once he starts to get one in, then it's kind of going to be when it rains, it pours. Like we saw in the Wizards game, he hit two clutch threes after having a pretty bad game, because once he's a confidence shooter, and you can tell like his shoulders are a little bit slumped when he misses a couple in a row and he's unsure of himself. And there are times when he's hitting, and that kind of leads to other parts of his game, like passing and rebounding and really ding up. And he's all about confidence, and I think most players are.
All right, we mentioned we're not going to go too deep in on that Pistons game. Just a horrific performance for the Nets, and we will leave it right there. But the Hawks, Josh, I only want to spend like 2 or 3 minutes on this game because it was the Hawks. But my main takeaway from this one was what a great performance it was by Jahlil Okafor, and he was just really, frankly, dominant when he was in the game. 17 points in 12 minutes. Somehow managed to do that without getting a single rebound. And I know you were complaining to me over text about how finesse his game is, and I've a little bit of the same issues as you, just because that wasn't really the guy I expected the Nets would get. But I'm so impressed with his scoring ability.
Yeah, he was very good in that Hawks game. Really making sure he could have taken some 10 or 12 foot shots, but really putting his shoulder into guys and getting an easier shot, moving to the basket. And he has decent touch for a big man, but when you're taking a lot of those 8 to 10 foot floaters, you're not going to be as efficient unless you're Brook Lopez, who's absolutely has supernatural touch on those shots. So it's good to see him have the game where he really is taking it to the basket, putting himself in easier situations, because his power game is phenomenal. And if you have a power game and you can add a little bit of finesse onto that, that's what makes you a special player. But if he's going to start with his finesse game, then we really need to reevaluate his potential. So I think it was great to see his performance, and I think he provided a really nice spark for the Nets, who, besides Spencer Dinwiddie, didn't really play that well in that game, but he was able to kind of keep the bench units afloat, and they were able to pull out a win in the Hawks. And great to see them get a win in a clutch game, because they had some struggles, obviously, against better quality opponents in Boston and Toronto, but it's good to see them pull one out regardless.
Yeah, I go back and forth in Okafor, because then there's some games like that Wizards one we're going to talk about in about 5-10 minutes, where he's just like totally like out of it, and like he doesn't play well initially, and then Atkinson doesn't really put him back in after his first run. But when he's out there looking good, like, he really does provide an element the Nets just don't have. And like, frankly, it's like, it's cool to see, because like, so many teams in the NBA don't really have that element of low post scoring. And I know guys like Tyler Zeller have been really good at finishing off breakdowns, but with Okafor, I just have so much confidence that when, like, he gets a good pass, like, he every single time he knows how to put it in the basket. Like Jared Allen, occasionally you'll see him jam it, and then other times you'll see him bring it down and either turn it over or throw it back out. Like, he never really wastes those opportunities. So I got to say, I really enjoy that. And I'm so fascinated to see how he finishes up this season, because there is potential for him to be kind of like a stalwart with this team going forward. And I know that sounds like a lot based off like two or three good games he's had this season, but I kind of see where he fits in, and he fills a role, and like he fills a role that like a lot of teams don't have. So that is kind of a way the Nets could generate and what's frankly like an unorthodox advantage in the modern NBA.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how his minutes versus Jared Allen's minutes are going to be divided, especially when we get into March and April and the games mean a little bit less. But it's tough to know, because he might not be on the team next year, and I think that he seems to like it in Brooklyn, especially with the investment that the performance team has made in really trying to develop him and make sure his conditioning is up to speed. But there is a lot left to be decided. Honestly, Dennis Schroeder really impressed me a lot in that Atlanta game. He was an excellent performer, 34 points. The Nets just couldn't stop him. And I think it's kind of been an underrated problem that the Nets have a lot of trouble with these very fast, speedy guards, because they can get their shot whenever they want, and if they're missing them, then it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And... Side note, we were just watching the Vikings-Saints game, and the Vikings just won on one of the most amazing Stephon Diggs touchdowns I've ever seen, and he went to Maryland, so go Terps.
Oh, really? I haven't... Well, it was like a last-second touchdown? It
beat the buzzer-beating touchdown.
Really?
The Saints just missed a tackle, whiffed on a tackle, and they should have won. I think they threw a 60-yard touchdown with.
Oh, that's brutal!
Last play of the game.
I was rooting for, even though it'd be cool to have the Super Bowl in Minnesota with Minnesota. I was rooting for New Orleans, because I just don't want Tom Brady to cruise to another Super Bowl, and if he has to beat Blake Bortles and then Case Keenum to win a title, or Nick Foles, those are the only options now.
Let's get back to the Nets.
It's so upsetting. Oh God, I hate the Patriots. Okay,
oh my God.
I bet everyone agrees with me listening. So I think this is good for people. All right, any final thoughts on those Hawks games, or you want to wrap it up there?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I mean, I think that
they're down five in the final minutes. So
Spencer Dinwiddie finally getting some shots to go in crunch time. And I shouldn't say finally, because he was excellent in Minnesota. But he was great. That one play where the ball just sat on the rim and we weren't sure if it was going to be a charge or a block, and then it just fell in.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Getting his own rebound off those missed free throws.
That happens a lot, because I feel like going back to the Memphis game where Trevor Booker, RIP, had like three straight offensive rebounds in a row off free throws.
Yeah.
Nets get a lot of offensive rebounds on free throws. But yeah, big takeaways from Atlanta game. Dinwiddie almost had the triple-double. Quincy AC knocked down some threes. Jahlil Okafor played very well. So solid team effort against a team that is pretty pesky in Atlanta, because the Nets have lost them this year.
Okay. All right. We're going to call this part one. Part two coming out right after. We'll post them simultaneously, so you'll get a full week of Nets basketball into podcasts. Hope you appreciate that and don't hate us for that. We promise we are going to be on a more regular schedule going forward these last 2 weeks between minor illnesses that I couldn't handle personally and travel. It's been kind of tough, but it's going to be a lot more consistent going forward. That is our promise to you. Thanks for tuning in. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Peace out.